This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
This is USA Today, Hour 1 Reading on the radio reading services of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. This Friday, April 26th, I'm Tom Breed. I'll be reading for you. We'll begin with the week in review. Most talked about stories that occurred this week. Voyager 1, the most distant human-made object in the universe, is talking to NASA again. The plucky 46-year-old probe had been phoning home as usual, but speaking gibberish, sending unreadable data since November. Using old schematics, engineers pinpointed a failed chip in the stubborn 1970s era onboard computer, repositioned some computer code, and voila! Voyager 1 is now 15.1 billion miles from Earth and still going and going and going. Ashley Judd took to the original bully pulpit, the White House, Tuesday to go to bat for mental health in America. She was there to support a suicide prevention initiative nearly 2 years to the day after her mother, Naomi Judd, took her own life. Untreated mental illness stole from our family, and she deserved better, said the actress, 56, herself a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. I know the feeling of not wanting to be here. I've been in good recovery for 18 years, and I've had a different outcome. I carry a message of hope and recovery. American golfer Nelly Korda is the latest sensation in women's sport after she captured her fifth straight LPGA title Sunday with a win at the Chevron Championship in the Woodlands, Texas, and sealed it with a splash cannonball style with the traditional winner's leap into the 18th green pond at Carlton Woods. Korda, 25, now boasts 13 career championships and joins the club of players who have won 5 consecutive starts in pro golf history. Annika Sorenstam, Nancy Lopez, Byron Nelson, Tiger Woods, and Ben Hogan. That's quite a group. National Star Wars Day is almost upon us, May 4th. And what better way to celebrate than to raise a toast with a glass of blue milk. True Moo, a farmer-owned dairy brand, has hooked up with Lucasfilms ahead of May 4, May the 4th be with you, as fans say, to offer the vanilla-flavored low-fat drink. You have to be from another galaxy to not know. But a young Luke Skywalker drinks blue milk in Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. It can be found in half gallons at select stores in most major markets as well as DoorDash. And where does the cosmic milk get its color? Boring old earthbound food coloring. Now we'll turn to a couple front page stories. Weinstein, New York rape conviction was overturned. Harvey Weinstein, the disgraced Hollywood mogul, whose 2020 rape conviction catalyzed the Me Too movement, may soon get his day in court again. On Thursday, a New York appeals court overturned his conviction on the grounds that testimony provided by women who had not brought cases against Weinstein could have prejudiced the jury against him. Weinstein's lawyers hailed the decision, with attorney Arthur Adala telling reporters outside Manhattan Criminal Court that the law was not applied fairly. Others condemn the ruling as legal maneuvering that will make it harder for victims of sexual assault. The decision is wrong, Douglas Wigger, who represented the 8 Weinstein accusers, told USA Today. The evidence was important to show the defendant's motive and his intent. While few experts argue with the legalities of the ruling, advocates for sexual abuse lament the signal it sends. It is reassuring that the law is capable of self-correction when human error clouds the process, says Juliet Williams, professor of gender studies at the University of California, Los Angeles. At the same time, it is profoundly disheartening to live under a legal system that continues to fail victims of sexual violence. The testimony of women who had been abused by Weinstein but were not part of the lawsuit was relevant and vital, said Anne Olivares, attorney with McAllister Olivares, a New York and London-based law firm. The women who reported being raped by Weinstein, those women are terrified, she said, which is why, she argues, it was important to allow the testimony of others with information about reputation. The Me Too movement that was ignited by Weinstein's accusers not only brought about the Hollywood power player's conviction, but led to Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting and high-profile companion movies, such as 2022's She Said, about the New York Times reporters who dogged Weinstein and convinced his victims to speak out. For those who work with victims, the court ruling reflects the vast challenges survivors face in seeking justice. But we cannot let a single case outcome be seen as a measure of Me Too, said Laura Palumbo, spokesperson for the National Sexual Violence Resource Center. The movement will still have strength and purpose until healing and justice are more accessible. The ruling Thursday does not mean freedom for the producer who leveraged his power to abuse women, from unknown assistants to stars such as Gwyneth Paltrow, Salma Hayek, and Ashley Judd, who sought advice and opportunities from the Miramax boss, whose movies minted legends and won slews of Oscars. Weinstein will likely be transferred to California, where he was convicted of rape in 2022 and received a 16-year sentence. His New York conviction got him 23 years in prison. On Thursday, Judd wrote on her Instagram account, "This is unfair to survivors. We live in our truth. We know what happened." Legal experts say the appeals court decision is most likely to send a signal to judges and prosecutors in future cases, cautioning both about the potential inadmissibility of their witnesses. Zealous prosecutors will try and bring in everything they can to help their case, which just means that it's up to the judge to slice and dice what's appropriate. Jurors in this case likely knew that Weinstein was a bad guy, based on things they had heard or read, he said. But when you're in criminal court, the analysis has to be limited to the charges at hand, not to whether the defendant is a bad guy by reputation. Few lawyers anticipate the reversal in Weinstein's case to lead to other Me Too convictions being revisited. I don't see this decision having precedential impact on other cases, says the president of the Los Angeles-based West Coast Trial Lawyers. For me, it was a slim majority in the New York case, 4-3, and the New York law doesn't control California and other state laws. If anything, experts say the appeals court ruling will force lawyers to dig deeper into their own state laws before bringing forward testimony that could backfire, said Jamie White, a Michigan lawyer whose past clients have included those who suffered abuse at the hands of the Catholic Church and Team USA gymnastics coach Larry Nassar. In general, a defendant's prior bad acts are not admissible. There are many exceptions, and they vary from state to state, said White, who described Thursday's ruling as a setback for victims of crimes in general. White says that while defendants are not being tried on everything they've ever done in their lives, when past behavior is part of a pattern, as was the case with Weinstein's decades of abuses, the inclusion should be carefully considered. In its ruling, the appeals court judges wrote that the trial court erroneously admitted testimony of uncharged alleged prior sexual acts against persons other than the complainants of the underlying crimes. The remedy for these egregious errors is a new trial. If and when a new Weinstein trial is ordered in New York, it remains to be seen how many of the accusers will want to go through that legal ordeal again. Says Wigger, every time a survivor recounts their stories, it's re-traumatizing. Now there's also the trauma of the decision being overturned after all their hard work and effort. But at least one Weinstein accuser, Mimi Haley, stands ready, said her attorney, Gloria Allred. Although victims have lost this battle, they have not lost the war, Allred said in a statement. We will continue to fight for justice for victims, both in criminal and civil cases, until there is a fair trial. A second front page article this Friday, April 26. Nearly all nursing homes in America will have to hire more nurses and aides under a new rule released this week that mandates a minimum level of staffing, although the gap is significantly wider in many southern states. Just 160 skilled nursing facilities out of roughly 14,500 that receive federal payments for care met the new requirements every day last summer. That's 160 out of 14,500. Most nursing homes met core components of the new rule on only 3 days out of 92 in the quarter. About half the time, facilities had enough people to provide each resident at least 0.55 hours of care from a registered nurse each day, as the new rules required. About 1 day each week, the facilities could provide each resident 2.45 hours of care from a certified nursing assistant, CNA, or aide, which they must do every day under the new rules. In addition, nursing homes have to provide a total of at least 3.45 hours per resident of daily nurse and aide staffing, as well as have a registered nurse on site 24/7. It was more common for nursing homes to have enough registered nurses, with most meeting the minimum about half the time. It was less common for facilities to have enough aides on duty, with most only having enough CNAs about one-third of the time. The rules will be phased in over 3 years. The regulation also allows an exemption to the rules for facilities that can prove they are located in an area with a shortage of healthcare workers and have made a good faith effort to hire more nurses and aides. Why is it important to have enough nurses and aides? For decades, academic research has shown that staffing levels reliably predict the quality of care in nursing homes, and that shortages increase the risk of delayed response to daily needs, like toileting and eating, as well as medical emergencies such as falls and strokes. A pivotal federal study from 20 years ago, when most nursing home residents were younger and healthier than they are today, suggested a minimum of 4.1 hours per resident each day, more than the new rule. These are the first nationwide minimum staffing rules with numeric benchmarks, which supporters have said will make it easier to track and enforce. Regulations have long required, and still do, that skilled nursing facilities have enough nurses and aides with the correct training to meet the need of every resident's care plan. Some people require more care from a registered nurse for complex medical conditions. Others need more assistance from an aide with daily tasks like getting out of bed or eating. A previous USA Today investigation found, however, that the rule was rarely enforced. Service Employees International Union, SEIU, a union representing many healthcare professions, had advocated for the new staffing minimums as crucial to reducing burnout and turnover among nurses and aides, in addition to the benefit for the residents they serve. The new rule could result in nursing homes hiring more than 200,000 additional care workers, if they can find them. Which states have the biggest gap in nursing home staffing? It is more common in several southern states for skilled nursing facilities to operate with fewer nurses and aides than the new rule would require. In Louisiana, nursing homes had, on average, the total minimum staffing on just 3 out of 92 days in the summer quarter last year. The next lowest were Texas, 4 days, Oklahoma, 8 days, Tennessee, 8 days, and Georgia, 9. Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Texas had the biggest gap to fill on registered nurse staffing, meeting the new requirement on 6 days, 14 days, and 16 days out of 92. In addition to Puerto Rico, Guam, Washington, D.C., and 3 states, on average, had facilities meeting the new standard at least 75 days in the quarter. The best was Alaska, Hawaii, Utah, Maine, and Delaware. Many states, southern states, also fared poorly when comparing current staffing of aides to the new requirements. Out of 92 days, facilities met the CNA requirement on 11 days in Texas, 15 days in Tennessee, and 16 days in Virginia. On the flip side, facilities on average met the requirement on 89 days in Alaska, 81 days in Oregon, and 72 days in North Dakota. Turning to another article in the Hour 1 session of USA Today this Friday, April 26, feds to crack down on polluting power plants with new rules. What are the new rules? Require all coal-fired power plants that plan to run in the long term and all new natural gas-fired plants to control 90% of their carbon pollution. Strengthen and update mercury and toxic air standards for coal-fired power plants. Tighten the emission standards for toxic metals by 67%. And reduce emissions of mercury and other contaminants that are important for children and others who regularly consume fish with high level of pollutants. Reduce pollutants discharged through wastewater from coal-fired power plants by more than 660 million pounds a year by setting wastewater discharge standards. Require the safe management of coal ash placed in areas previously unregulated at the federal level, including disposal sites. The new rules are a big deal, Ben Jealous, executive director of the Sierra Club, said. They're saying power companies are going to have to do a much better job of being a better neighbor. The nation has made major improvements in all quality and reducing emissions in recent decades by shutting down 382 coal-fired power plants, Jealous said. The newer standards are expected to move those efforts even further. Questions raised. In a statement, Don Brulette, chief executive officer for the Edison Electric Institute, said its members, companies, are proud that carbon emissions from the nation's power sector are as low as they were nearly 50 years ago, while electricity use has more than doubled. EPA's suite of new regulations will affect the generation sources that will be used to reliably power America's increasingly electricity-dependent economy, and we appreciate the agency's efforts to align compliance deadlines to help companies make informed resource planning decisions that minimize customer costs, Brulette said. America's Power, a partnership of coal power-related industries, slammed the rule, dubbed the Clean Power Plan, which sets emission limits. Michelle Bloodworth, president and CEO, said it's an extreme and unlawful overreach that endangers Americans' supply of dependable and affordable electricity. Representative Andrew Garbarino of New York sent a letter to Reagan this week questioning the EPA's authority to regulate power plant emissions. He cited a 2022 decision by the Supreme Court, which ruled against the agency in a case about its efforts to do so. That decision is a red light flashing at EPA, Garbarino spoke, because it said new standards should be determined by legislation rather than by agency rule. Bloodworth said the EPA's Clean Power Plan is the same kind of overreach that led to the court's 2022 decision. Already, utilities have announced plans to shut down more than 60,000 megawatts of coal-fired generation over the next 5 years, she said. The new rule will accelerate those requirements and retirements, and Bloodworth said it represents a clear and present danger to our electricity supply and to our economy. The League of Conservation Voters, however, said the EPA is following the guidelines established by the court's decision. What's the biggest source of greenhouse gas emission? About 30% of the new nation's carbon dioxide emissions comes from the electricity sector. According to the EPA's website, the largest share, 35%, comes from the transportation sector, which generates about 24% of the total greenhouse gas emissions. The EPA reports that burning coal produces more carbon dioxide than burning natural gas or oil. Moving along efforts for energy transmission and clean vehicles. The new rule for electrical transmission lines sets a binding 2-year timeline for federal agencies to issue authorizations and permits, cutting in half the average time a developer spends to acquire permits, Granum said. The measure also requires developers of transmission lines to develop public participation plans when they apply for permits. The EPA also announced the launch of a nearly $1 billion grant program funded through the Inflation Reduction Act to replace heavy-duty vehicles with zero-emission vehicles. The grant program will support projects bringing electric school buses, garbage trucks, delivery vans to neighborhoods across America, and John Podesta, senior advisor to Biden on international climate policy, agreed. These announcements are a huge step towards electrifying trucks and buses across the country, especially in communities disproportionately impacted by toxic tailpipe pollution, said Darian Davis, government affairs advocate for climate and clean energy for the League of Conservation Voters. Carrasco Gonzalez, senior director of the CHISPA League of Conservation, said the funding and tax credits for clean vehicles means there's never been a better time to replace aging diesel buses with clean ride for kids. The Environmental Protection Agency released long-awaited updated power plant standards Thursday, aiming to further reduce air pollution that makes people sick and greenhouse gas emissions. Federal officials said the rules would deliver on the Biden administration's commitment to provide health protections for communities, including those confronted with decades of environmental injustices. Since the start of this administration, President Biden has made it clear, we are committed to the integrated priorities of assuring U.S. energy security, protecting people from pollution, and fighting the climate crisis, said EPA Administrator Michael Regan. The four new rules will do that by reducing pollution from fossil fuel-fired power plants, protecting communities from pollution, and improving public health. Reagan said, all while supporting the long-term, reliable supply of electricity needed to power America. The Department of Energy also announced a new rule designed to make the permitting process for building energy transmission infrastructure more efficient and effective. The rules are expected to provide up to $370 billion in climate and public health net benefits over the next two decades, while providing a more predictable regulatory outlook for power companies. The EPA said it doesn't expect any erosion of electricity generation or grid reliability. Several trades, however, defended the electrical industry and expressed concern about some aspects of the new rules. The administration projects the following outcomes for the year 2035, up to 1,200 avoided premature deaths, 870 avoided hospital and emergency room visits, 1,900 avoided cases of asthma onset, 360,000 avoided cases of asthma symptoms, 57,000 lost workdays, 48,000 avoided school absences. Turning to another story, as part of USA Today Hour 1, Biden world leaders call to release hostages of Hamas. President Joe Biden and the leaders of 17 other countries called Thursday for the release of hostages held by the Palestinian militant group Hamas. In a joint statement, the leaders said the fate of the hostages and the civilian population in Gaza are protected under international law. We strongly support the ongoing mediation efforts in order to bring our people home, the statement said. We reiterate our call on Hamas to release the hostages and let us end this crisis so that collectively we can focus our efforts on bringing peace and stability to the region. The statement was issued by Biden and the leaders of, I'll read them, Argentina, Austria, Brazil, Bulgaria, Canada, Colombia, Denmark, France, Germany, Hungary, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Serbia, Spain, Thailand, and the United Kingdom. And the hostages include citizens of each of those countries. More than 130 hostages, including five Americans, are believed to be in Hamas captivity in Gaza since the start of its war with Israel last fall. The war was ignited by the militant group's assault on Israel communities October 7th that killed almost 1,200 people. More than 100 hostages were released last year. The Biden administration has for months worked to secure a temporary ceasefire between Hamas and Israel that would allow for the release of the remaining hostages. But progress has stalled. Hamas has rejected a deal that is on the table and negotiations remain deadlocked. In their statement, the world leaders emphasize that the deal would bring an immediate and prolonged ceasefire in Gaza that would facilitate a surge of additional humanitarian assistance to be delivered throughout Gaza. Gazans would be able to return to their homes and their lands with preparations beforehand to ensure shelter and humanitarian provisions, the statement said. A senior administration official speaking on the condition of anonymity said releasing the hostages is the roadmap to end the crisis. The fate of the deal rests with one guy, Hamas leader Sinwar, who has refused to accept it, the official said. In other developments, Hamas released a video Wednesday purporting to show one of the remaining American hostages, 23-year-old Hirsch Goldberg Pollan. The short updated video showed Goldberg Pollan missing a lower arm, but otherwise apparently healthy. Also Wednesday, Biden met at the White House with Abigail Eden, a 4-year-old U.S. citizen who is among the first group of hostages Hamas released from Gaza during a truce in November. Arizona grand jury indicts Trump allies. A grand jury has charged 11 Arizona Republicans and 7 former aides to Donald Trump in a scheme to keep Trump in the White House by falsely certifying he won the state in 2020, appearing to include the former president's lawyer Rudy Giuliani and the former chief of staff Mark Meadows. Attorney General Chris Mays, a Democrat, announced the indictment had been issued on Wednesday. It alleges the slate of Republicans, sometimes known as fake electors, engaged in a conspiracy aimed at preventing the lawful transfer of the presidency of the United States, keeping President Donald J. Trump in office against the will of Arizona voters and depriving Arizona voters of their right to vote and have their votes counted. The name of 7 other individuals are redacted from the grand jury indictment, meaning they have not yet been served notice of the charges against them. Though their names are redacted, as are the charges against them, details in the indictment make clear that many top allies of Trump's, who led a pressure campaign to change the election result, are also facing charges in Arizona. Those individuals seem to include Giuliani, Mark Meadows, and others. Trump is, according to the document, unindicted co-conspirator number 1. The grand jury decision could levy criminal consequences for an unprecedented plot to subvert the will of the Arizona voters, one that has ruptured faith in elections and fueled election conspiracies that have taken root in GOP politics in the state. It comes as Mays has promised to aggressively combat election conspiracies, offering a sharp contrast to her predecessor. The grand jury, a panel of Arizonians who met in secret in recent weeks, heard evidence presented by Mays, prosecutors, and ultimately decided there was enough to substantiate criminal charges. The 11 electors are each charged with 9 criminal counts, including conspiracy, fraudulent schemes and artifices, fraudulent schemes and practices, and 6 counts of forgery. Their lawyers, or the named defendants themselves, could not be immediately reached for comment. The fake electors in Arizona are Tyler Boehner, executive with Turning Point USA, and the committeeman for the Republican National Committee, Nancy Cottle, who chaired the Arizona Trump electors, State Senator Jake Hoffman, State Senator Anthony Kern, Jim Lehman, former U.S. Senate candidate, Robert Montgomery, former chair of the Cochise County Republican Committee, Samuel Moorhead, a former leader of Gila County Republican Party, Lorraine Pellegrino, secretary of the Arizona Trump electors, Greg Staffston, former executive director of the Arizona Republican Party, Kelly Ward, former chair of the Arizona Republican Party, Michael Ward, Kelly Ward's husband and a GOP activist, the electors who claim Trump won. Mays has been under immense political pressure to bring a case. Similar states, slates of electors in Michigan, Georgia, and Nevada have already been charged for their role in the sweeping effort to keep Trump in power. And a federal grand jury last year brought charges against Trump, alleging the former president conspired with others to disenfranchise voters and subvert President Joe Biden's win. Trump is also facing changes in the Georgia case and charges, which allege he led a criminal enterprise and relies on a state law normally reserved for prosecuting mobsters. Several of the Arizona electors have previously claimed they were merely offering Congress a backup plan, though nothing in the documents sent to Congress and the National Archives backs up that assertion. Similar groups of electors in other states did include conditional language, but none was included in Arizona. Biden carried Arizona in November 2020 by a 10,457 vote margin. It was Biden's smallest margin of victory in any state and only the second time in 70 years that a Democrat won the state. At the time, Trump had spent months furthering doubt about the election result. In the days after his loss, he and his aides unleashed a pressure campaign on GOP leaders in Arizona and in other states. They found some support in Arizona, while others rebuffed the president's unfounded claims. That split in loyalties continues to divide the state's Republican Party and grassroots support, threatening the party's ability to win elections in the swing state. Arizona actually had two different groups of illegitimate GOP electors. The indictment made public on Wednesday names the slate that included more prominent Republican figures, some of whose involvement had already been well established by the Congressional Committee investigating the violent break-in at the Capitol on January 6, 2021. Those 11 GOP electors met at the Arizona Republican headquarters in Phoenix on December 14, 2020, posting videos on social media of themselves casting their votes for Trump. They signed paperwork to submit to Congress claiming they were duly elected and qualified electors. But that was a lie. The same day, electors for Biden meant to cast their vote in the Electoral College confirming the Democrats' win. They met at an undisclosed location, citing security concerns tied to Trump's refusal to accept his loss. It was a procedural process that prior to 2020 was a formality, often overlooked by most Americans. Investigations began under a new attorney general in 2023. Mays confirmed more than 1 year ago in March 2023 that her office would investigate Arizona's electors who falsely claim to be legitimate. A former Republican who left the party in 2019, citing the growth of Trumpism and what she saw as shrinking room for moderates in the party. Mays had been in office for 2 months. She won her election in November 2022 by 280 votes, one of the narrowest margins in state history. The race and others on the ballot 2 years ago put to the test Arizonians' appetite for electing those who deny legitimate election results. Mays pledged to protect election workers and defend elections where her Republican predecessor, Mark Brnovich, had tried to straddle election denialism. She promised a purposeful shift in focus within the office, which amounts to the largest state's largest law firm, and condemned Brnovich for sitting on a report for over a year that said his office did not uncover any criminality or fraud. Her investigation at first focused on the 11 electors, but a trickle of information that has leaked out from the grand jury proceedings over the past several weeks has suggested Mays cast a wider net. Two Arizona congressmen who were among the loudest voices in support of Trump's Stop the Steal campaign, Andy Biggs and Paul Gosar, received subpoenas. May's office turned to Trump attorney Kenneth Cheeseborough for information. Cheeseborough, who also aided prosecutors in Georgia after he was indicted, and Nevada, wrote memorandums outlining the strategy to send alternative electors to Congress. Sending the documents from Trump's electors can prevent Biden from amassing 270 votes on January 6 and force the member of Congress, the media, and the American people to focus on the substantive evidence of illegal election and counting activities in the six contested states. One memo from December 6, 2020 reads, "The memo suggests states that undertook the plan should also spread messaging that presents this as a routine measure. The effort was anything but routine. It was criminal," the grand jury said. Though their names are redacted, as are the charges against them, the details in the indictment make clear that many top allies of Trump's are also facing charges. Another article, Arizona 1864 abortion ban repeal approved by House. The Arizona House on Wednesday narrowly voted to repeal a near-total abortion ban dating from 1864, capping 3 weeks of efforts that have galvanized national attention. 32-28 vote came after passionate speeches from most Republicans who described abortion in graphic detail and as contrary to Republican values. But their attempts to block the repeal failed when Republicans Matt Grass and Justin Wilmoth of Phoenix and Tim Dunn of Yuma joined with all 29 Democrats to pass House Bill 2677. "Stop calling it archaic to ban abortions," said Representative Barbara Parker, referring to critics of the near-total abortion ban, who constantly note it was enacted 160 years ago. "It's archaic to do abortions." People like many of her fellow Republicans called abortion murder because it does not respect the life of the unborn child. "I can hear their silent screams. With my voice, I vote no," Parker said. Aside from the emotional comments, there was little reaction when the vote was finalized. Democrats and the three Republicans were silent as they cast their votes. But anger bubbled over when Grass motioned that the bill be sent to the Senate and have it returned without amendments so it could be immediately transmitted to Governor Katie Hobbs for her action. The motion failed, but it unleashed an immediate and angry response from Republicans who saw it as unnecessary and divisive. Republican Speaker Pro Tem Travis Grantham said the motion drives a knife into the House chamber, which has endured three successive weeks of tense and dramatic debate over the law that the state Supreme Court upheld on April 9th. House Speaker Ben Toma immediately removed Grass, as well as Representative Oscar De La Santos, from the Appropriations Committee, a key panel that's pivotal to work on the state budget. The vote turns attention to the state Senate, which is poised to take up the matter next Wednesday if there is agreement to bring it up for a vote. Last week, with little fanfare, the Senate started work on Senate Bill 1734, which is identical to the measure the House approved. Reaction to the House vote was widespread and broke along ideological line. The Alliance Defending Freedom, which successfully defended the 1864 law before the state Supreme Court, expressed disappointment in a statement. Life's a human right. It always will be. And the said senior counsel, Jack Warner, this doesn't cease to be true because of a vote. We will continue to do everything we can to protect life and advocate for real support and real health care for women and families in Arizona and across the country. Likewise, Kathy Herod, president of the Anti-Abortion Center for Arizona Policy, was dismayed at the vote. I weep and I grieve for the lives of unborn children that are lost to abortion and for the lives of women that will be harmed by abortion, Herod said. She was a key advocate for ensuring that the 1864 law would take effect if the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the Roe v. Wade decision, which it did in June 2022. Chris Love, spokesperson for Arizona for Abortion Access Initiative, called the House's vote too little, too late. That's because the House didn't muster enough votes to pass the repeal on an emergency basis. If this were the case, it would allow the repeal to take effect as soon as Hobbs would sign it. Instead, the 1864 law is set to have the force of law on June 8th, well before the House Bill 2677 is expected to take effect. Initiative backers said they'll press on with the efforts to get the measure on the November 5th ballot and to convince Arizona voters why it's needed. One thing remains clear. Anti-abortion politicians and architects of a scam to confuse voters cannot be trusted to give Arizonians the freedom to make their own deeply personal decisions about abortion, said Cheryl Bruce, campaign manager for Arizona for Abortion Access. Attorney General Mays said in a statement she was glad sanity prevailed at the House, and she urged the Senate to act quickly. That 160-year-old law that criminalizes doctors and nurses for caring for their patients and endangers the life and health of women across our country has no place in the 21st century, Mays said. Now for our last story today, the shadow workforce. It is unlikely we'll have enough time to complete the entire article, but we'll be able to read a substantial part of it. The sliver of southeastern New Mexico, of southeastern New Mexico dotted with pump jacks and gas wells helped catapult the U.S. to energy independence 5 years ago. Immigrant workers, including those here illegally, helped make it happen. That has made for an uncomfortable reality here in this proudly conservative county whose immigration has fueled growth, but the politics are deep red. Nearly 80% of voters favored Donald Trump in the last election. This is Lee County, New Mexico. Now, Trump's twin vows to drill, baby, drill, and deport unauthorized immigrants are on a collision course in Lee County. Here, fake work papers can be bought for $250, and oil companies hire workers, knowingly or not, who sneaked across American borders or overstayed a tourist visa. The complicated reality, experts say, is today's oil and gas economy is carried on the backs of migrant workers. Carlos Diaz, 50, who's Mexican, is an oil and gas safety inspector in Lee County. He has been deported multiple times, including at least twice during Trump's presidency. He has always come back and found an employer willing to hire him. We're the most important labor force they have, said Diaz, who asked to be identified by the name for which he isn't known locally. We're Mexican, we're close by, we're easy for the gringos to hire. A USA Today investigation found that immigrants, including those without authorization, increasingly do the dangerous and difficult jobs that make fracking for oil and gas possible in the United States. Interviews with more than a dozen current and former unauthorized oil field workers and their family members, as well as immigration advocates, elected officials, economists, researchers, and federal investigators, revealed an oil and gas industry supercharged by demand during the post-pandemic economic recovery. Businesses were unable to find all the help they needed to drill and maintain wells in the Permian Basin, one of the world's most productive oil and gas regions. Undocumented workers are one of the oil and gas industry's best-kept secrets, says U.S. Representative Gabe Vasquez, a Democrat who represents southern New Mexico's oil and gas country, despite losing Lee County in the last election. They are the shadow workforce. Trump has repeatedly argued that sealing the border and deporting unauthorized immigrants is necessary to fight the flow of drugs and reduce crime, and conservative Lee County residents agree. His promise to roll back environmental regulations and red tape is a winning one in a community that lives and dies by the price of a barrel of oil. Even immigrant workers who could end up deported see dollar signs in the former president's promise to energize the industry. With Trump, Diaz said, there will definitely be more work in oil. That's what you hear about. We see good people. The Permian Basin sprawls over 66 counties in southeastern New Mexico and western Texas. Lee County and its neighbor Eddy County account for nearly a third of crude oil and natural gas production in the basin last year. Getting all that oil and gas out of the ground requires many hands, said Jonathan Sena, a Republican Lee County commissioner. There is so much work in Lee County right now that anyone who wants a job could get enough work for 24 hours a day for the next year, he said. Nationwide, as the oil and gas workforce has grown, percentage of foreign-born workers in the industry has nearly tripled. More than 14% of nearly 600,000 workers in mining, quarrying, and oil and gas in 2023 were foreign-born, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, compared with 5% of roughly 520,000 workers in 2003. Sena calls himself a very conservative Republican, and he supports Trump. But in a dog-eat-dog presidential campaign year, he has been struggling with his candidate's rhetoric. He knows immigrant workers, including people here illegally, prop up the industry that is the lifeblood of his community. He also knows them personally, his constituents, members of his evangelical church, and his neighbors. Where Trump often describes migrants as criminal, Sena says he knows phenomenal workers. We see good people and people who are helping the economy do well. We don't have enough workers in our community. A boom-bust cycle. In Lee County's largest city, Hobbs, population 40,508, today's oil boom looks like restaurants filled three times a day with tables of men in work boots. A Starbucks opens 7 days a week at 5 a.m., big city traffic, 23 hotels, in a town too small for Target. But everyone in the country dreads the bust, which, when they hit hard. Restaurants and hotels close or scrape by. Equipment lots fill up with rows of parked oil field machinery. Workers with citizenship or legal residency wait on unemployment for their global price of oil to climb. With no access to government benefits, immigrants working illegally sit tight and do what they have to survive. Now, with the industry going strong, if there was a mass deportation, it would profoundly disrupt the oil patch, said Gabe Collins, energy analyst. It's not just Lee County of the Permian basis, he said. A mass deportation could provide a systematic disruption that could ripple through and across industries. It's the lack of economic opportunity that often pushes migrants to leave their home countries. Hobbs residents knows how a workforce shortage can hold back oil and gas development. And that concludes the reading of Hour 1, USA Today, this Friday, April 26. I'm Tom Breed, wishing each of you a good day and a good weekend. Thank you.